Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors, close the blinds, change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Taras Kuzio. We discuss the latest development with the US-led Ukrainian peace plan and why it's faltering. We look at what the Trump administration's ignoring and why that is leading to the problems that we are witnessing at the moment. So I hope you find this episode interesting. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Dr. Taras Kuzio, welcome back to the podcast. Just for new listeners, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I'm born in Britain of Ukrainian-Italian parents. I grew up in the sort of Ukrainian community in Britain. I've been covering the former USSR and, of course, Russia-Ukraine since about the mid-80s. In the last decade or so, sadly, I've been writing a lot and researching a lot about military aggression, war, the roots of this war, as the Russians like to talk about it, and questions. In particular, what I'm interested in is identity and history, how that fuels the war. I'm a professor at a university in Kiev called the National University of Kiev Mohyla Academy, where I do online teaching and student supervision of student essays. This year, I've published two books. One was with Ian Garner, edited collection of about 10 chapters dealing with what we describe as Russia as a fascist state. And secondly, a book that came out this month, Cambridge University Press, jointly authored with a Polish colleague, Michal Wawrzonek, talking about the four roots of the war. Again, this is because a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon, both in 2014 and 2022, about Ukraine, Russia. 90% of them are not experts. They haven't traveled to the country. They don't know the languages. But of course, it's a sexy topic. And you can probably get grants and consultancy on the back of claiming you're an expert. And of course, everybody on Twitter and social media is these days an expert. So we're kind of trying to bring people down to reality by looking at what we see as the interconnection between these four roots, dealing with imperial nationalism, nostalgia for the Soviet Union and Tsarist Empire, international factors such as anti-Western xenophobia, and then also the divergence between Russia and Ukraine since 1991 on the political side. One's a fascist dictatorship, one's a struggling democracy, and also on questions of identity. So we kind of bring all these factors together. There's a lot of still surprising, less now than there was in 2014, claims such as, you know, this is all to do with NATO enlargement. This is complete nonsense. Ukraine has never been invited to join NATO. The last US president who supported Ukraine's membership of NATO was George Bush back in 2008. So again, this is not even a Donald Trump issue, which everybody seems to want to blame. It's actually Barack Obama was the first US president to oppose Ukraine joining NATO, and then Joe Biden also didn't support it, and now Donald Trump. So NATO is just not an issue. And I'll just end on this by pointing to the fact that Russia has six Western neighbors. And why is it that Russia only has a problem with one of those neighbors joining NATO? Why doesn't it have a problem with Estonia joining NATO, or Poland or Finland? It's just Ukraine. So therefore, it's not NATO which is the issue. It's the fact that joining NATO and the EU means Ukraine is forever lost to Russian identity, a Russian imperial kind of thought, and the idea of rebuilding something, whether it's an empire, Russian Union, Eurasian civilization, whatever you want to call it. But that's why Ukraine is the issue. Joining a Western structures means Ukraine is lost to Russia. So I think people are approaching it from way the wrong way. The roots of this war, this is a phrase that Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, always uses, and Russian leaders always use. They always talk about the need to deal with the roots of the war. The roots of the war are basically that Russia will only accept Ukraine as a Belarusian-style puppet state. That's what we're talking about. Because Ukraine has never really accepted that kind of position, I mean, Lukashenko's been in power since 1994, and therefore Russia always thought it could influence domestic politics in Ukraine, particularly when Viktor Yanukovych, the pro-Russian president, was in charge. But that, of course, all changed after 2014, and hence the antagonism grew after 2014. And in fact, if people, and I'm surprised very few people do, or journalists do, look at Russia's draft peace proposal from 2022, which was revived this year, there's an annex there. There are two annexes, one on military, what Russia demands of the kind of downsizing of Ukraine's military. But the other annex, which everybody ignores, is a list of a huge number of Ukrainian laws going back to the 1990s, but particularly since 2014, that Russia demands be repealed. And this is the root of the war. These laws deal with language, education, culture, decommunization, foreign policy, basically all of the areas that make Ukraine Ukrainian and less Russian. So if you want to look at where the real roots of the war are, just take a look at that draft peace agreement. That's what Russia is demanding. And it's absolutely, I mean, which country has a right to demand of another country, you know, what laws its parliament adopts? I mean, this is obviously absolutely ridiculous. But this is a reflection of this, of the fact that Russia doesn't regard Ukraine as a real country.
So where's Putin coming from in all this? Because you were saying to me off air that Putin sort of seems to be stuck in the 19th century, whilst a lot of people dealing with the conflict today are stuck in the 21st century.
Well, this is a major factor that I think, again, is beyond a lot of people, that we are lost in translation, particularly with the American team, the Trump team, the Witkoff team, who obviously have zero understanding of what I've just been talking about, the roots of the war. I mean, Trump brags he doesn't read books. And there are two examples of this. Putin's interview with Tucker Carlson, take a look at it. He goes on a rant about Russian-Ukrainian history going back 1,000 years. Tucker Carlson, who's of course very, very pro-Putin, is dumbfounded. He didn't come to Russia to do an interview about Kiev Rus 1,000 years ago. And the second example of that is in Alaska at the summit, where Trump was so fed up of Putin's ranting that they cancelled the lunch. And this obsession is a product of some scholars like Mikhail Zigar, the Russian exiled journalist, talks about this going back to 2000, so 25 years, when Putin first became president. Other scholars talk about this going back to the early 1990s, because Putin came from the KGB, and the KGB was always Russian nationalist in the former USSR. Soviet anti-nationalist propaganda was primarily directed against Ukraine and the three Baltic states, Estonians, Latvians, Lithuanians. Russians or Russian nationalists or Russian dissidents never called for the independence of Russia from the USSR. That was just the non-Russians like Ukrainians. So the KGB were very much, you know, had in their mindset the evilness of Ukrainian nationalists, and Putin inherited that. So you could say his obsession maybe goes back to the 1990s. But certainly it grew a lot after 2012, when he returned to the presidency, and where he stayed, of course, and he returned as historians of Russia will understand, as the gatherer of Russian lands. This is a term from Russian history, where and by Russian here, this is the same as the Eastern Slavs, so Russians, Ukrainians, and Belarusians. He would rebuild the kind of the core of the former USSR, because the USSR, although it was 15 republics, the real hardcore of that structure were three Eastern Slavs. They dominated the politics, the economics, and especially the security and military. Didn't get many Uzbek or Georgian or Tajik senior officers in the Soviet military, for example. These were Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians. And to rebuild something in Eurasia, because Putin talks about Russia at the center of a new Eurasian state civilization, you need to have that core, and that core is the three Eastern Slavs. Belarus is already in Putin's pocket for a long time. So Ukraine is the missing link. And Ukraine is key, because this is where it all began 1,000 years ago. And hence that obsession. Another part of this obsession is Putin's, and this is similar to Trump in this sense, is Putin's wish to enter history as a kind of famous Russian leader. And there are book series and billboards and historical societies that promote this in Russia, that Putin is the latest in a long line going back to Peter the Great, Catherine, Stalin, and now Putin. And going into history for Putin will be that he's taken back what is Russia's. So Crimea, so-called New Russia, this southeast Ukraine. This has been a demand for decades that these allegedly historical Russian lands were wrongly included inside Soviet Ukraine, and Putin has dealt with an injustice, shall we say. So he'll go into history for taking that back. And in 2014, most Russians supported the annexation of Crimea, including some members of the opposition like Alexei Navalny. So this was very popular. It boosted his popularity. So I think that obsession drives it and makes it very difficult to see how you can get some kind of negotiated settlement, because when we talk about this war as being existential for Ukraine, if Ukraine is defeated, there's no more Ukraine. This is existential also for Putin, because how does he get out of this? I mean, if he was tomorrow to say, okay, we're ending the war, like Trump team want, the war's over, it's a ceasefire. What are Russians going to say about this? Was this worth it? I mean, we haven't accomplished what our goals were. The goals in 2022 were regime change in Kiev to install a Lukashenko-style puppet leader. And Viktor Yanukovych was actually brought back from Russia ready to be installed because the Russians had been drinking too much Kool-Aid, as the Americans say, and they believed they would be victorious in Kiev within a few days, some of them, or a few weeks. So Russia hasn't, or Putin hasn't accomplished everything, and plus at tremendous cost, both to the country, the economy, and also to the fact there's nearly 1.2 million casualties. So, and those Russian wounded usually die. I mean, in the West, we describe them as separate, killed and wounded, but in Russia, wounded are usually left to die. That's a huge number when we just think about, for example, Afghanistan. The Soviet army was in Afghanistan for a decade, and it had 50,000 casualties. Here we have Russia in Ukraine for 3.5 years with 1.2 million. And that's just simply mind-boggling. Another factor preventing Putin sort of ending the war quickly is the fear of what will happen inside Russia. Not only the growing anger about these high levels of casualties, I mean, the way Russian soldiers are treated, they're not only killed by Ukrainians, but they're abysmally treated by their own officers. I mean, it's just, it's disgusting how Russian soldiers are treated, and now they are ripped off by corrupt Russian officers, and yet they still go to die. It's what's going to happen with all those veterans? There are now going to be millions of Russians who participated in the war. They're going to be angry, and if we go back in history a bit, the Afghan veterans in the 1990s joined. Many of them were unemployed. They were angry. They became alcoholics, drug users, and they joined organized crime as the hitmen. And so this is already happening inside Russia. Russian veterans who are going back, and remember, many of them are ex-criminals. They've been let out of Russian prisons. They're going back to Russia and doing crimes, theft, murder, rape, etc. So it's another factor that Putin is worried about, but primarily it's his legacy. What would Russians say about his legacy? Is he going to go down as Peter the Great and Stalin, or is he going to go down as Gorbachev? And I think all of these factors make it very difficult for Putin to agree to some ceasefire. Ukrainians would be happy to agree to some compromise ceasefire. of course, with some certain conditions. But the Trump team are approaching this in a completely wrong way, very pro-Russian way, citing, just a few days ago, Trump complained that, you know, it's Ukraine's fault that nothing's been signed. So there's a great cartoon I remember from one newspaper which has Trump sitting next to Zelensky, and Trump looks over and says, "You know, if you capitulate, I get the Nobel Peace Prize." I mean, it literally is as simple as that. So if the Ukrainians can see that the Americans team, all they want really is for Ukraine to basically sign on the dotted line, irrespective of what's in there, well, how is that going to generate confidence in American security guarantees? Especially because Ukraine's already been stabbed in the back once already in 2014, when President Obama and Prime Minister Cameron, signatories to the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, completely ignored their commitments. So, hence, Ukraine is demanding any security guarantees be made into American law, adopted by the US Congress, because they don't trust anybody in the Trump team.
Well, there's a sort of a twofold issue going on the American side of things at the moment. Number one is Trump's sort of temperament and his desire for a Nobel Peace Prize and to get a deal, because his whole brand's about getting deals and stuff. But then the other thing as well is there's been this sort of, based on the Wall Street Journal's reporting about Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Kirill Dmitriev, the head of the Russian Sovereign Wealth Fund. Apparently, Dmitriev was pushing for a plan for US companies to be able to tap into roughly 300 billion of Russian central bank assets that are currently frozen in Europe. And they wanted to create a kind of US-Russian investment project that led to a US-led reconstruction of Ukraine and joint Russian US sort of exploitation of minerals in the Arctic. And apparently all of this comes about because of this. There's been a kind of Kremlin plan to kind of make Russia look like a kind of an investment partner to deal with rather than a kind of a foe. So what are your thoughts on all of that? Because there's quite a couple of complicated things going on there.
No, the article in the Wall Street Journal was sickening. It was, you don't know, we didn't know whether to grab a bottle of Scotch whiskey or just throw up. I mean, it really was, Ronald Reagan must be turning in his grave at this. You know, forget ideals, they're out of the window. And we saw that in the new national security doctrine of the United States. But, well, I think the best response to this was made by Mr. Browder, who used to be the biggest foreign investor in Russia, and said, if you think the Russians are going to let you make money in Russia, you are complete suckers. Because they'll bring you in and they'll rip you off. And so it's a mixture of naivety and greed here. I mean, as various commentators have pointed out, all of these people who are kind of sycophantically surrounding Trump, they're already billionaires. I mean, what more money do they need? They're not exactly poor people saying, oh, maybe I can, you know, pull myself up a bit here by making money in Russia. They're already billionaires. So it's not as though they need this money. So that's the kind of sickness of it. It's obviously linked as well to, there's been many articles. There was just one a few days ago in the New Yorker about how this is the most corrupt presidency in US history. The Trump team are just making tons of money out of this, you know, and then we have the ridiculousness of Trump's children saying that Ukraine is more corrupt than Russia. So I think that is part of it. Of course, Witkoff here is leading that whole aspect of it. And then we have, besides the Wall Street Journal article, we have two leaks, you know, two WhatsApp discussion leaks to Bloomberg. I mean, you can't get really worse. I mean, if you're a Ukrainian negotiator or even European, I mean, you must be pulling your hair out at this because I've jokingly said in quite a few of my talks, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm a political scientist, and I can't understand how they can just mess it up so badly and also don't not approach it in the way that even they should be doing to get what they want. For example, if Donald Trump really wants a Nobel Peace Prize, and he obviously does, this would be the icing on the cake. He's allegedly solved 8 wars. Of course, that's rubbish, but he's allegedly keeps bringing out this piece of paper with 8 wars he's resolved. This would be the icing on the cake. Well, he's going about it the wrong way. There's zero pressure on Russia, or very little pressure on Russia. You need to deal with Russia's or Putin's obsessions, why he's unable to budge. Deal with those through military, economic, energy, and whatever other pressures you can apply. Get him and therefore Russia to reduce their maximalist demands, which still exist, the same ones from early 2022. And then maybe you can get some compromise at the negotiating table. But until that happens, the only thing on the table is really the Americans siding with the Russians to demand Ukraine capitulates. And we'll talk about this, I guess, separately, but this is simply not going to happen. On the question of the frozen Russian assets, this, I think, problem reflects other issues of the lack of understanding of legalities, both on the frozen assets and legalities in Ukraine. For Ukraine to give away territory, so to legally recognize territories belonging to Russia, requires, according to the Ukrainian constitution, a referendum. Now, I mean, just the mechanics of that, how do you do a referendum when 6 million people are living abroad as refugees? But more importantly, you can't hold a referendum during martial law. You can't hold elections during martial law. I mean, that's, I'm sure, common to many democracies. So how's Zelensky going to even deal with that issue? I think on more fundamental issue, it's not just Putin that's kind of constrained by the veterans question, military veterans. It's the Ukrainian side. I mean, Ukrainian troops in the Donbas, but Ukrainian veterans in general. We're talking about probably, I would say, over 1 million. I've not seen figures, but it's got to be between 1 to 2 million Ukrainians who are veterans as well since 2014. They're not going to agree to this withdrawal. There was a Sky report, which you know, listeners and viewers can find on YouTube, just a few days ago, where the Sky correspondent went into some underground bunkers in the Donbas, and these were incredibly well built and well developed. And the idea that you're going to give up all of these, you know, incredibly strong and well-built fortifications to Russia, and then trust Putin and Trump after that, I mean, are you serious? Obviously not. So hence, all of these are kind of obstacle issues. And that's why, sadly, I just don't see how there is much of a real peace process. I mean, obviously, diplomats are going to, like, Zelensky is not going to want to offend Trump. Europeans don't want to offend Trump, so everybody's going through the motions. But I don't think there's much of concrete being discussed there. I think factors on the ground will be more important. And we'll see how Russia fares in 2026, its economy, finances, and when is Russia going to experience its 1917 moment? I mean, how many Russians are willing to die? When are they going to say enough? I mean, and the number of casualties is just mind-boggling. I mean, the British Ministry of Defence talks about it going up in the last few months because of warfare around Pokrovsk in the Donbass to something like 1,200 a day. A day! I mean, it makes you wonder how, if this is possible, this can continue indefinitely.
Yeah, it's multiple things to unpack with that one. I'm fascinated also about like the views of like Russian expats about Putin at the moment, because I keep meeting kind of two types. I meet some who are just horrified by what's going on, but then I meet others who tell me, oh, no, it's all NATO's fault and Putin's doing the right thing and the West is bad, yet they live in England and seems to be happily living in England, but pro-Putin. So, yeah, what are the kind of what's going on with the Russian view of Putin?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Again, from my own kind of personal experience, during the Cold War, the biggest Ukrainian diaspora in Europe, so we're talking, of course, about Western Europe now, was in Britain, where I grew up. 30,000, it's not a huge diaspora, but it was bigger than the one in France and Germany. And we literally had practically every weekend outside the Soviet embassy, now the Russian embassy, Notting Hill Gate, we had demonstrations, pickets, hunger strikes, sometimes just Ukrainians, sometimes Ukrainians with Poles or Estonians and Lithuanians. Literally every weekend, they were so fed up of us outside the Soviet embassy. Today, in England, there are 150,000 Russians. So a lot more. When do you ever see them demonstrating? I've never seen or never read about a demonstration outside the Russian embassy in Notting Hill Gate by Russian emigres. Why? I think, I think you're right to say that a certain proportion of these emigres want to live in the West, but they're actually still pro-Putin. You have this in Israel. There's a large Russian Jewish community in Israel, which supports the far right, Prime Minister Netanyahu, and the far right of Israeli politics, and they're pro-Putin as well. They watch Russian TV all day. Another example here is Skripal. Putin sent two assassins to kill him with horrible, chemical, biological substance in 2018. And yet, biographies of him since then have talked about how he would sit all day and watch Russian TV. And in these biographies, this Mr. Skripal, who's anti-Putin, talks about how military aggression against Ukraine is a good thing. You need to sort out those damn Ukrainians. And Crimea is ours anyway, so let's stop talking about it. So I think not all Russian emigres are anti-Putin. Some are, some aren't. There's also an increasing, I think, problem that Western intelligence agencies have, is that Russia implanted a lot of spies inside the diaspora. Particularly, remember that there are different figures between 750,000 and 1,000,000 Russians fled from Russia in the autumn of 2022. Some of those Russian spies have now been arrested in Germany and Poland. The FBI has been investigating the Russian diaspora in the US. So that's another factor. The other issue which separates, say, Ukrainians in the West or Lithuanians or Poles with Russians in the West is their attitudes to the war. And here, the widow of Alexei Navalny seems to have real problems in articulating a very strong anti-Putin message. She had an op-ed in The Economist about a month ago, and she doesn't really mention anything about the war crimes committed by Russian forces, and wants to blame all of this on Russian leaders. So there is, I think, quite a sizable number of Russian members of the opposition who live in the West who want to say, no, this is Putin's war, this is not Russia's war. Which, of course, I think to most analysts, and here Jade McClain has a great book from 2023 called Russia's War, where the entire book is devoted to how this is a war by the Russian people. It's not just Putin's war. I mean, you can't keep mobilizing voluntarily 30,000 Russians every month if there isn't some support for the war. It's not just a money factor. In the 1980s, most people in the Soviet Union, including Russians, did not want to fight in Afghanistan. There was opposition against being sent there. Today, that's not the case in Russia. I mean, where is that? And you have quite a few Russian experts in the West who also argue this case, that this is Putin's war, this is not Russia's war, and they doubt opinion polls. There's one sociological organization still left inside Russia, which is independent, called the Levada Center. And they have been doing polls every month since the full-scale invasion. And every month they get the similar results of about 70-75% support for the war, of which, of course, it's about evenly divided between hardliners and, you know, more moderates. But that's still a high figure. So the only way you can really argue that no, these polls are wrong is to say, well, you can't really do a proper opinion poll inside Putin's Russia. But there are other examples of that. So yes, I think there is this. There are these tremendous divisions. I mean, the good, from my point of view, who understand this war the best are people like Mikhail Zigar, the former famous chess player Kasparov. They say it like it is, as it were. But others tiptoe around a lot of these issues. It's not just the question of war crimes. It's a question of, for example, recently the EU is trying to clamp down on giving visas to Russian citizens. They condemn that. Issues surrounding what will happen to Russia when the war ends. You know, will Russia have to pay reparations? All of those kinds of issues. Which, of course, the Trump team doesn't seem to understand, that they have no ability legally to access those frozen Russian assets which are in Belgium. So the idea that they can draw up a peace plan where they have access to those and make money from it is simply ludicrous. But yes, all of these factors make it very frustrating when you read comments by members of the Russian opposition. They don't seem to want to go the extra mile and do a full-scale, shall we say, condemnation of what is taking place.
Let's take a break and be right back with more.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
It seems likely, obviously I can't guarantee this, but it seems likely that this current round of peace talks, I put it in quotation marks, there's probably not going to pan out. And so what do we think might happen sort of next? I mean, are there going to be calls for Zelensky to stand down from America? Because I remember earlier this year when the famous J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, Zelensky spat in the White House happened, suddenly there was a whole stream of articles that just came out the next day about how Zelensky should stand down. And I think, personally, I think that's a mistake, because I think Zelensky at the moment, and again, I could be wrong here, but from an outsider looking in, Zelensky does seem to, as because he's a former actor and stuff, knows how to sort of persuade people and talk in a certain language that appeals with people. And I think bringing in somebody new might run the risk of, I don't think it'd be a positive thing. I don't know who would replace Zelensky and have the ability he does. I know Zelensky is not perfect, and I know there's been some issues with recent kind of corruption scandals that have tainted him slightly as well in Ukrainian politics. So what do we think is going to kind of happen over the next sort of few weeks, maybe even a few months? I mean, what does this mean for Ukraine, Europe and America? And what does this potentially mean for Russia as well, if these talks collapse?
I'd be surprised if they collapse like completely. I mean, Trump's been threatening to withdraw from them for the whole year. He's going to persist probably, but I think they're going to go nowhere because he doesn't seem to get it that he needs to apply pressure on Putin, what I've already talked about, that you have to get Putin to moderate Russian demands. The current Russian demands, which are backed by the Trump administration, and we saw in the 28 so-called peace plan, are Ukraine surrender. That is not going to happen. Zelensky doesn't have the ability to do that, even if he wanted to, and he doesn't. But it's not just Zelensky. Europe wouldn't want that either. So I think what we're going to have, we'll have a lessening reduction of military activity because it's winter time now and up to, say, end of February, mid-March. So that will take place. In 2026, I'm sure Trump will persist in trying to pull Ukraine's arm up its back. But I think what will continue is that I think with the adoption of this U.S. New national security strategy, there's growing realization in Europe that they're on their own. And that means that whereas up until Trump, financial and economic aid to Ukraine was kind of approximately split evenly between the U.S. and Europe, now Europe has to carry the can completely. Trump has given no financial aid. I don't believe that he's going to cut off military support, because Europeans and NATO are buying equipment from the United States, and those American military companies and defense companies will be very angry with Trump if he was to suddenly say, no, we're not going to sell you anything. So I don't, Trump wants to make money. So I don't think that will end. There's always debate about the intelligence side. We don't know to what extent America is giving intelligence to Ukraine and whether Europe can replace that. So that's the big question mark. I mean, that's something you can't really find in open sources, right? I'm less worried about US ending the sale of military equipment to Ukraine. There are many positive developments, both inside Ukraine, something like 60% of Ukraine's military equipment is now produced domestically using this formula first created by Denmark, where you give financial support to Ukraine, and then that builds up Ukraine's defense companies. Ukraine is probably the leading country in the world now in terms of defense innovation. I had a very long piece in Jamestown Foundation, which you could put a link to, about a month ago, about all of this huge number of private defense companies in Ukraine. It's very different to the Soviet Union and very different to Russia, where Russia still has the Soviet model of these big Soviet government-owned factories, whereas Ukraine is like a lot of garage and Silicon Valley-style small private companies, and very quickly innovating. So I think that will. I think it's going to be a case that this will continue. That United States will continue to sell weapons to NATO and the EU, which will give to Ukraine. The attritional war will continue. The EU keeps talking about improving its sanctions, particularly on energy, which have been largely not very good, because the EU, up until last year, the EU has given more financial money to the Russian budget from the buying of Russian energy than it's given to Ukraine. And it's surprising when you look at graphs of countries still importing Russian energy. So we have countries like France. You know, Macron is on his pedestal trying to tell everybody that he's now the new de Gaulle, but France is importing still a lot of Russian LNG. Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, is now a strong hawk against Russia. But when he was Prime Minister of Holland, he was a supporter of Nord Stream 2 and an importer of Russian energy. So I think that kind of typical European kind of, you know, one foot in, one foot out kind of mixed messaging is going to continue. I think the other positive side is now leading countries like Scandinavian, Britain are doing joint military production with Ukraine, both inside Ukraine and in Britain and Denmark. Denmark just opened its first Ukrainian factory to produce missiles, Flamingo missiles. The war inside Russia will continue, and outside Russia, Ukraine is actually undertaking better sanctions against Russia's energy sector than the EU, destroying Russia's refinery capacity, and also now attacking Russia's shadow fleet, both in the Black Sea and off the coast of Africa. So I think all of this will simply continue. I don't see how this is going to somehow end. I'm not very optimistic about there being a breakthrough, because how do you square the circle of Russia demanding Ukraine's capitulation and Ukraine become a Russian puppet state, Ukraine's refusal to do that, and refusal to give away territory? I mean, how do you square that circle? I think I know diplomats can pull rabbits out of hats, but that's pretty impossible to do. The big, I think, whatever everybody will be looking at in 2026 is, can Russia continue? There have been maybe a bit too optimistic, a bit too wishful thinking, you know, analysis about whether Russia's economy, Russia's finances, Russia's ability to mobilize volunteers will continue in 2026. Ukraine is hoping that will have an impact. So there are, I think 2000, in that sense, 2026 could be a crucial year for this war. On a final note, I think the big missing link in all of this is Western strategy, because there isn't one. Forget even Trump. There wasn't one under Biden either. What is Western strategy? Well, it seems to be by default that we fight to the last Ukrainian. As long as the war's over there, it's not inside EU and NATO. But that is not a strategy. That's disastrous, because it basically means that Ukraine just gets continuously pulverized. Refugees will never go home. And, you know, casualties will mount. Zelensky is going to stay Ukrainian president, irrespective of whatever any Western leader says, because you can't hold an election during martial law. If there's a peace agreement, sure, Ukrainians will be very happy to hold an election, although this will be complicated because of the number of refugees abroad and because there are so many internally displaced people as well. So how do you create an electoral register, a proper electoral register? So Zelensky is going to remain in place. And yes, he's been impacted upon by this high-level corruption scandal, although at the moment, at least, no fingers are pointing at him having his hand in the pocket of this corruption scandal. But he has to prove that he is determined to show that he supports the law enforcement agencies in putting these people in prison and seeking the extradition of the main leader of the group, of this criminal group, Mr. Mindich, from Israel, which I think is going to be very difficult because Israel doesn't have extradition treaties. So Zelensky is going to remain in place. I think his main plus is that he never had baggage from the 1990s. Most Ukrainian politicians, like Russian and others, were very involved in the 1990s Wild West transition to capitalism. And so they had a kind of a bad mark against them. Zelensky wasn't involved in that. He made his own money from the entertainment business, including, by the way, a lot in Russia. So in that sense, he doesn't have skeletons in his closet, at least until now, maybe. So we're going to still continue to see Zelensky. I think he still comes across as quite popular because he's young. He hasn't got skeletons in his closet. He's still got charisma, but I would never want his job. My God, it must be such a stressful job. You can imagine if you're a fly on the wall in the evening in the hotel after Zelensky's been negotiating with the Trump team. He must be going, what a bunch of idiots. It was funny to see the photographs from the last negotiating with the Ukrainians on one side and Witkoff and the others, Jared Kushner on the other side. And Witkoff was so, and this was just after the Bloomberg leaks, and Witkoff was so he could see he wasn't in the right place. He felt like a fish out of water. But when he was in Moscow, he was in heaven. He was all smiles. So sadly, I think this, what we're seeing at the moment is going to continue. And Europe, I think, understands it has to take the baton. Trump is no longer going to be involved in, in helping to provide things for free. So it's now up to Europe. In that sense, a colleague of mine compared this to Gaza. The difference being is that the Palestinians had a peace process, a Trump peace process imposed upon them because the Gaza Palestinians had no external support, really. I mean, even the Arab states didn't really support them. Whereas in the Ukrainian case, the whole of Europe, except for Hungary, of course, supports Ukraine. And none of those European countries want to see Ukraine lose the war or capitulate. So in that sense, Zelensky is not on his own. He does have support. And the strongest backers in Europe are always going to be Britain, the four Scandinavian or four Nordic countries, three Baltic states, and Poland.
Let's take a break and be right back with more.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
I'm going to invite you for any final thoughts, just because I'll probably need to wrap up in a minute. So is there anything else you'd like to add? Because I think you've covered a lot there.
Well, I think what we need to focus on is that there needs to be a Europe. Now it's going to be European, because European Canadian, maybe because the Americans are not involved. Approach to the war. There needs to be unified statement, either NATO and EU together with Canada and Britain, Norway, together as to what they want, where they want this to go. Because I think it's very difficult to negotiate anything in this war unless people have an understanding of what they want to aspire to. Some countries like the British, the Poles, Estonians probably have said in the past they want Russia to be defeated. Is this the goal? Is this the main goal? Because the current way it's transpiring, which is just, you know, we continue to support Ukraine continues to fight, it's not a strategy. And it's not great for Ukraine, because the country just gets pulverized. I mean, the cost, people keep bringing up or estimating the cost of rebuilding Ukraine. Well, that's going to keep going up if this war continues. So I think, why is it, I don't understand why it's so difficult for Western governments, for, as I say, the Canadians, or the basically NATO EU, because Canada, Norway, Britain are in the EU, are in NATO. Why can't they come up with a concrete strategy? This is why we're supporting Ukraine. This is what we want to see from Ukraine. Maybe they're afraid of openly saying they want Russia's military defeat. Maybe that's the issue. But I think until that happens, we're going to be in this kind of no man's land, negotiating and tiptoeing around each other, negotiating when there's a big gulf, not understanding the roots of the war, and not understanding where we want this to go.
Is it similar to the fears around the fall of the USSR? Uncertainty. People don't really know what a defeated Russia will look like in a post-Putin Russia, because even Russia doesn't know what a post-Putin Russia will look like because of Putin.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the irony in Russia is that there is no successor to Putin. He has no sons, so he can't follow, shall we say, the Syrian or other example of he puts his son in place. So yes, I mean, you could look to history here and say that every time Russia's lost a war, whether it's a Crimean War, Russo-Japanese War in 1905 or 1917, the First World War, what happens is that reformers come to power. I mean, the traditional stereotype and fear is that after a defeat, nationalists come to power or angry. Well, no, that's not the case, is it? Because these historical examples show that actually reformers came to power after those military defeats. So you could argue that would happen again in Russia if Russia is militarily defeated. But you're absolutely right. And I remember 1990-91, because this is when particularly the Bush senior was US president, and their biggest fear was nuclear weapons. So the previous historical examples really refer to a time when Russia didn't have nukes. So the fear is always, you know, what happens when a country with nukes disintegrates? And in 1991, the talk was of a nuclear Yugoslavia, that this is going to be a massive civil wars throughout the former USSR, when what's going to happen to the nukes? I mean, nobody can steal a strategic missile, but maybe tactical nuclear weapons. I mean, that didn't happen. There were a few ethnic conflicts, but not throughout the former Soviet Union. I mean, it was Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Moldova. It's only three countries out of 15. But yes, what happens? I mean, some scholars are talking about the fact that this is a new Russian empire, that this will lead to the breakup of the Russian Federation, because about 30%, probably more, of the population of Russia are national minorities. Many of them are quite angry now because they've been disproportionately used in the war in Ukraine, like, for example, Buryats on the Mongolian-Russian border. There's no question that Chechnya would declare independence if Russia was defeated, because Kadyrov would be scared what would happen to him. I mean, he's got to transform into a... Without Putin's support, Kadyrov is finished. But I think, you know, I'm a bit skeptical about these minority groups seceding, because many of them are Russified and there are large Russian populations in these autonomous areas. I think it's more likely Russia will return to something like the 1990s, which would be a dysfunctional state where the central government wouldn't be in charge. But there would obviously be a civil war in the sense at the top of Russian politics, because everybody wants to grab a slice of the action. I mean, there is no honor amongst thieves. There is a reason why Putin sits at a very long table and the people he's talking to sit at the other end. They don't trust each other. And if Putin's gone, the kind of central arbiter's gone, and they're all going to want to, get in his place and to have a comical look at that, just take a look at The Death of Stalin, this comedy movie, where they're all, you know, arguing and killing each other and trying to sort of take his place, as it were, Stalin's place. So I think that's more likely. I'd be very surprised if, you know, this is no longer 1991, in the sense that in 1991 there were tactical nukes everywhere in the Soviet Union and strategic nuclear weapons in four countries: Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Belarus, Russia. That's no longer the case. There's only, you know, there's just nuclear weapons in Russia, and they're usually in the ethnically Russian parts of Russia, not in the national minority areas. I mean, the comical bit of 1991 was when President Bush came to Kiev, and on the 1st of August 1991, he gave what was dubbed the Chicken Kiev speech, where he gave a speech to the Ukrainian parliament warning them against going for independence. The Ukrainians were very polite, they listened, and then they ignored him 24 days later when they declared independence. So, yes, I think this is something on their minds. What happens when a former superpower or a declining great power loses a war? I think this is something on their minds. And in that sense, it is very similar to how some policymakers, particularly the Americans, were very worried about this in 1991. With Trump, I think it's something else. There's an additional factor, and that is that I think he comes from an international affairs perspective where he thinks the big players, the bully men, because he's a bully, the bullies should rule the world. So you know, the Chinese should have their sphere of influence in Southeast Asia, the Russians should have theirs, including Ukraine, and the Americans have their Monroe Doctrine and sphere of influence in Central and South America. We see this, you know, with Trump showing off his military muscle in Venezuela now. So I think that's Trump's approach. He doesn't treat smaller countries like Ukraine seriously. In that sense, he's similar to Putin. And a final factor added on top of that is that, and again, something that not many people bring up, is that Trump is a Brexiteer. So he hates the European Union. And you saw that in the new national security strategy. Him and Musk want the EU to go. Well, obviously it's not going to go. And so they're supporting far-right, they're supporting the same far-right anti-EU parties that the Kremlin is supporting. So I think that's another additional factor, and it's a factor why the British government is becoming closer to you, to going back to becoming closer to Europe, the opposite. So I think all of these kind of factors are playing there. Trump has he has respect for Putin. He wrongly believes Putin is his friend. He has zero respect for Ukraine and zero respect for Europeans.
Mm. Yeah, it's a big issue. So very concerning and interesting times ahead. I'm sure we'll be chatting about the next development, whatever that may be.
Yes. Sadly, we will. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I can come back to your podcast and say I was wrong in being too skeptical about a peace agreement, because I think that is something Ukrainians want. But opinion polls do not show that Ukrainians are ready for a surrendering or capitulation, despite all of the travails of, you know, living through electricity blackouts and lack of heat in winter. I mean, that's not the case. And again, I'm not a historian, but historians tell me that bombing countries into submission never works. I mean, the Nazis tried it in Britain in 1940. It doesn't work.
No.
You have to have other factors involved to get a country to surrender. It's not just bombing civilians. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, indeed. Well, on that note, where can listeners find out more about you and your work?
On Twitter, and also you can do searches on Google, on the internet for my name. As I say, I have the two books that have come out this year are one published by Ibidem and Columbia University Press, editor collection with Ian Garner, on Russia as a Fascist State, And then the second book, the jointly authored book with Michal Vavzhonek. If you just do a search on Cambridge University Press, this is The Four Roots of Russia's War Against Ukraine. Those are the two new books. The Four Roots I've already talked about. The book on Russian fascism, it interlinks with something you asked about earlier, and we talked about Russian emigres and Russian academics or academics dealing with Russia in the West. There's a great reluctance among still many scholars to basically, when it quacks and it walks and waddles like a duck, it's a duck. And Russia has become a fascist state. It wasn't always like that under Putin, but we talk about it as kind of evolving from an authoritarian system in most of Putin's rule in the last 25 years, but changing particularly after 2020 when the constitution was changed to make him de facto leader for life into a fascist dictatorship. And just on a final note, which is stunning to hear, is that there are more political prisoners inside Russia today than there were in the Soviet Union.
Wow.
Post-Stalin, of course. Mm. Not talking about the Stalin era when there were millions, but the USSR from 1953 onwards had fewer political prisoners than in Putin's Russia today. That is the kind of regime. Internal fascistic dictatorship repression inside Russia is obviously interlinked with its external military aggression and war crimes against Ukraine and its anti-Western xenophobia. Which, as our Cambridge University Press book shows, these are all interlinked. You can't separate these out. Putin and Russian nationalists see the war in Ukraine as a war against the West. Finally, it seems to be dawning on European leaders that is the case. But the Russian nationalists, Putin, the Kremlin, think they are fighting the West in Ukraine because Ukraine is not a real country, and it's a puppet state of the West. That's how they see it. And so for them, the war with the West is already happening. We're the ones who are like ostriches and going, No, what are you talking about? No, there is no war. Well, it's kind of finally sinking in, but, why do Europeans not understand that these drones going over airfields, military bases, military headquarters are obviously preparation for collecting intelligence for a future war? I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's our biggest fear, I think, at the moment, isn't it, is a full-blown conflict.
Well, it is. I mean, you see with the Labour government planning a huge amount of investment into protecting those cables, which, of course, will be a major issue. I mean, there's still a tremendous, I think, still a bit of naivety, but I think it's slowly changing. But they need Ukraine help in bringing in shooting those drones down.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Well, unfortunately, I have to wrap up there. But thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me. And as you say, I'm sure we'll be talking about this in the near future again.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, in many respects, we probably will be. Which is fingers crossed for some sort of peace soon, but a fair peace that doesn't require surrender.
I hope I'm happy to go on camera saying I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I hope my skepticism is wrong, because the Ukrainians are the main people who want peace. They would love to have peace, and it would be a great thing for them. But we have to be realists.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
For listening. This is Secrets and Spies.
really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.